Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news relating to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here is your host of Lickin' on Lending, David Lickin.
Welcome, everybody. This is David Lickin. It is Monday, April 4th. Can you believe we've got the first quarter in the bag? It is just shocking and amazing that things are moving this quickly. This calendar, every year, it seems we whip the pages and rip them off that calendar faster and faster. This week, we've got another action-packed program based on the number of people dialed in from literally across the country. I'm seeing area codes representing, it seems like, all 50 states dialed in here. We're so grateful to have you as our listeners dialing in. I know you don't want to hear me sit and talk a lot about what the program's about, but we do want to remind you that you can pass this word around to your friends and associates, that they can listen in by going to the website, Lickin' on Lending, LYKKEN, onlending.com, and listen on a streaming basis, or you can dial in as many of you are today and listen on your phones. We thank you so much for being a part of the program and helping to get the word out. Again, this is a public service program to get the word out of what's going on in the industry. We try to do our best each and every week to bring you the hottest topics. Today we're going to have as our guests John Sochnit and Rich Andiano from Patton Boggs Law Firm, talking about LO Comp and the Mortgage Call Report a bit later in the program. Very exciting. But as we do each and every week, let's start it off with our very favorite resident rate expert, Joe Farr with MBS Quoteline. Joe, good to have you on the program.
Ah, thank you.
What's going on today, Joe?
Today we're up. We're up 8:30 seconds on the day, and we're up enough to where we've seen some favorable price changes, about an eighth higher than this morning when a lot of people would have put out price sheets. So that's a good thing, and no real reason for it that other than just a little momentum moving higher. No economic events came out today. The Dow's up a little bit. Not enough really to measure, but nice to see we're up.
Nice to see things up. Let's talk about last week. There was no real surprises last week. Seems like we've got a little bit of a lull in our rate reporting here, Joe. But
boy,
happened?
It's about time.
Yeah.
I mean, just think about the last few weeks. I mean, we've had so many events, so many surprises, some of them economic, some of them non-economic. So it's kind of nice to have a quiet week. No new headlines out of Japan or the Middle East or Europe this week. Most economic announcements that came out during the week were pretty much as expected. The Treasury auctions were average, maybe on the weak side of usual, but again, not enough to really push mortgage rates, MBS prices, one way or the other. It was a pretty good week for stocks, and usually in week where the stock market does well, the mortgage market doesn't do so well, but we were fine. And even a strong jobs report on Friday, a little stronger than expected, wasn't detrimental to mortgage prices. So it was really a pretty quiet week.
Overall, a very decent week. What do we got coming up on the calendar this week? If I'm looking at your website correctly, it looks like a very light week.
Nothing. Almost nothing.
Not
the ISM Services Index comes out tomorrow, and maybe the most important thing is the Fed meeting minutes will come out at 2 tomorrow, 2 Eastern time. And there's starting to be a little interest in the Fed individuals as more and more are coming out, and this week's going to be full of Fed speakers. We may learn a little bit about their positions, but there's more and more disagreement, it seems, as to the appropriate path. Should we start tightening monetary policy? Should we start selling assets? So it'll be interesting to see if any of that comes out in the minutes tomorrow.
Yeah, that will be interesting. Should we expect anything from the Fed governors? Any speeches coming up?
Yeah, all pretty much every day this week there's going to be one or more Fed governors speaking, and including Bernanke is going to be speaking tonight. But he hadn't stated the purpose of the speech, and you kind of know where he stands. It'll be interesting to see where everyone else stands.
And the jobless claims on Thursday. Any indication? What are they saying, up or down?
No big surprises there, Dave. The jobless claims are expected to be just about where they were last month, and so we'll just have to wait and see. But one thing did come out last week. It was not associated with the economic events but could have a big impact on mortgage-backed security prices, therefore mortgage prices, and that is this whole definition of qualified residential mortgage, the QRM definition.
I'm glad you brought that up.
Yeah. I know we're going to talk about it in more depth next week, but the FDIC, along with other federal regulators, issued their definition of what loans on which risk retention must be held, a 5% risk retention, and it pertains to all loans except those loans that are qualified residential mortgages. So the definition of qualified residential mortgage is really key to knowing if costs are going to be higher. It's going to cost more to the consumer if their loan is not a qualified residential mortgage. And what they did initially was made a very strict definition. Loans with less than 20% down payments would not be qualified residential mortgage. Loans with higher front-back ratios than what we're used to right now would not be qualified residential mortgage. But then they came along, which, those two definitions right there would really mean that most of the loans made today would not be, but they came in and they exempted government-guaranteed or insured mortgages. So FHA mortgages are exempted. And as long as Fannie and Freddie are in conservatorship, the loans that they would buy and securitize would be qualified residential mortgages. So at the same time, they made it very, very narrowly defined. They expanded it dramatically with where most loans are going these days. And by doing that, Dave, they really have established an ability to control things almost brilliantly. When you think about how that they control the underwriting decision, the underwriting guidelines of the agencies, they can begin to whittle down those loans that are qualified residential mortgages by changing Fannie Mae's underwriting guidelines.
The subtle implications of that, Joe, as we were talking about on the pre-radio program or the pre-program, pre-conference call, is significant. And we're going to be getting into it a lot more depth next week. I think that's really – I appreciate you bringing this out.
Yeah. And that's it.
That's it. Well, folks, you're going to definitely not want to miss next week's program. What are the implications of QRM, that announcement that was made? Joe, Alice, and Andy, myself, and we'll be searching for the best guest to get and do some dive into that topic a lot more depth. Remember, we've got as our special guests John Sotnick and Rich Andreano of the Patton Boggs Law Firm talking about EloComp and the Mortgage Call Report. Significant developments. We'll be right back after this brief break.
Economic uncertainty has created a tremendous amount of market volatility for the past few weeks. Intraday price changes seem the rule rather than the exception. Have you been surprised by a midday price change? Have you been frustrated as you locked a loan just ahead of a price movement? Found it difficult to explain to a customer why the rate you quoted is no longer available? MBS Quoline can eliminate these frustrations. MBS Quoline monitors Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, and Ginny Mae mortgage-backed security prices in real time. It makes the information conveniently available on your desktop, smartphone, or by email or text message. These are the same prices used to set mortgage rates each morning and to issue midday price changes when significant movement occurs. With MBS Quoline, you'll never be out of touch with the market, whether you're in the office or on the road. See for yourself what MBS Quoline can do for you. Go to MBSQuoline.com to start a risk-free two-week trial. MBSQuoline.com. Looking for a full-service mortgage training and consulting company to fit exactly what you need? Mortgage U is your ultimate education and information resource used by lenders to execute high-impact, high-quality trainings throughout the organization. Mortgage U instructors are mortgage professionals, providing classroom and web-based delivery, and has the most sought-after training manuals in the country. Mortgage U has a proven track record, performing customized training programs for hundreds and even thousands of employees, both live and online, on everything from application through loan delivery and insuring. Call Mortgage U today at 800-278-0200 or visit us online at mortgage-u.com. Welcome back to Lincoln on Lending. Our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here's David Lincoln.
Welcome back, everybody. It is Monday the 4th. We say that because many of you are downloading the program, listening to it, after you've listened to it live. We appreciate it very, very much. We are unfortunate. It's unfortunate today that we do not have Alice Alvey with us. She had an unexpected death in the family. Our hearts go out. Our prayers go out to her and her family. There is a lot of sadness going on there, but she is not with us. We are, again, our thoughts and prayers go out to her. But we have with us, as we do each and every week, Andy Scheld, the Prophet Doctor, talking to us about what to fix what's ailing your bottom line. Prophet Doctor, what do you have for us this week?
Hey, Dave. Good morning. Boy, it's cool here in Austin. The cold front just came through, and I'm going to have to go turn the heater up in our office building. Well, that reminds me, though. You know, a friend of mine recently installed new thick carpet in their house, but then they tried to shut the door, and the door wouldn't shut, so they thought that was kind of strange. So they took the door off, cut off the bottom of the door to put it back on, And it still wouldn't shut. So they're thinking, what's the deal here? So they looked at the door frame, and so surprisingly, they realized that the door frame's not straight and the wall's not straight. And he realized, my house isn't straight because the foundation had moved. So
we must have had the same builder, Andy.
Well, that could be a scary thing when the foundation's not solid. I mean, this is bad, right? I think that's the definition of bad, when your house starts moving like that. So it's bad for a house to have a flaky foundation, and it's also bad for a business. We've got to have a solid foundation in our business. And in my definition, I think you'd agree too, Dave, a solid foundation includes a strong cash position, lots of capital, profitability each and every month, and accurate financial reporting. Now, I include accurate financial reporting in the definition of a solid foundation because the financial reporting is the measurement of the results. It's the measurement of the condition of the business. It's the roadmap for the business's future financial success. So every company should have a detailed and accurate financial reporting system because this will measure every aspect of the business. And here's the good and the bad. The good and the bad news, and now, like it or not, detailed financial reporting is no longer an option. And you know why it's no longer an option?
That's right. The call report.
The new call report is setting the standards for measurement. We now have to report and capture lots and lots of detail in our mortgage banking business. Now, I have one caution. Many companies may have an accounting system that creates nice-looking financial statements. Great-looking financial statements might not be right. They may not have the detailed foundation to track all of their reporting requirements. We've got lots of stories of when people thought they had good financials and because they looked nice, but it turns out they really weren't. I'll skip that for now. But I can tell you that the new call report requires detailed foundation for financial reporting. And so for some companies, rather than recording the cash received when the loan is sold, mortgage banks must now capture all the details off the closing statement when the loan's funded. So they're going to have to post a funding entry when the loan's closed. And the call report's going to require a definition of all segments of income. So virtually every line on the HUD-1 is going to need to be captured. And also the customer's payment for escrow impounds when they close the loan and bring in money for hazard insurance and taxes that are held by the mortgage company, if that loan's on the books at month end, that must be reported as a liability even if the loan is net funded. Now, mortgage bankers have been able to get away with kind of loosely following some of this, but not anymore. This is going to be a big change for some folks because this is going to mean a lot more data has to be captured. Now, if the folks on the phone have been attending one of our Campus MBA webinars, then they already know how to do this because we've already gone over all of this. And actually, Dave, you know this. I'm going to be speaking in Dallas next week at the Texas MBA Federal Mandate Conference on this exact topic. I am, along with Ken Hughes, who's the president of one of the biggest CPA firms in Texas, he and I are going to be speaking on the call report, the federal mandates revolving around financial reporting. And to get this stuff right, one of the things that people need to realize is that it starts with your accounting system having a detailed chart of accounts. Now, the chart of accounts is just a listing of all the accounts in the accounting system. But this is the foundation to be able to capture the information for the call report. Now, once you get a good chart of accounts built, once the chart of accounts is enhanced, then we've got to manage our data capture process, because we've got to be able to structure it to accumulate all the information we need for the call report. And that may mean we're going to change the way some of the ways that we've been capturing data, because we've got to get more information pulled together. And then it gets even more complicated, because the new call report is going to require a cash flow statement that tracks changes in the balance sheet and then reports it in various segments. So if you've got a solid accounting system with a good chart of accounts, you're going to be able to flow right through this. We also, like we talked about last week, got to be sure and have a good origination system, because you've got to be able to track the disposition of applications from every office, from every originator in every state. So you've got to be able to do application disposition from an application to reject it for whatever reason, to fund it. You've got to be able to track all that stuff. So my encouragement is, don't underestimate the complexity of this new report, but we can do this. The clients that we work with that have installed the accounting systems we build can already do this stuff. So it's possible to get it done.
It doesn't have to be that difficult, yep.
It doesn't have to be that difficult, but you have to capture the data right. So and there's a silver lining in all this too, Dave. The silver lining is that once you've built the system to meet the requirements for the new call report, you know what you'll also be able to do? You'll be able to do profit by loan, profit by branch, profit by originator. You will have implemented loan-level accounting, so you'll be able to get the report you've been needing all this time but just didn't put the process in place to do it. So,
don't tell me the federal regulators have come up with a report or a requirement that actually were going to help us run our businesses?
Well, you know, by having to capture this level of accounting, these changes are good, Dave. People need to do this, and knowing your profit per loan is good, and having a solid accounting system is good. It's going to help with measuring results. It's going to help with forecasting the future. It's going to help with knowing where you are, and it's going to be better for your business, because, frankly, in my opinion, we should have been doing this all along, but we weren't forced to, so we didn't. But now that we're forced to, we're going to, and the industry is going to be better from it. I can't believe that's a good thing, but I believe it really is.
Regulation is a good thing. Well, you know what? In this case, having the information is one thing. Using it effectively, as we well know, Profit Doctor, is another. That's why people need to tune in each and every week and hear your segment on how to fix what ails your bottom line. And, Andy, thank you so much for bringing
an
update on the Profit Doctor. And also, by the way, we are starting again the webinar series through Campus MBA. On the 19th of this month, you're going to want to register. We're doing the accounting webinar that was so successful that we did a couple of months ago. MBA has asked to come back by popular demand. Andy and I will be sitting around a microphone and we've expanded into 6 segments to cover even more detail about mortgage accounting, mortgage lending accounting, mortgage loan accounting, mortgage banking accounting. It goes from the most basic all deep. Good to have you with us. We'll be right back after this break.
Consulting firm to the residential mortgage lending industry. No other firm in the U.S. offers the menu of services or the level of expertise to the industry.
If you're looking for help converting from best efforts to hedging, or need help with bookkeeping to know your profit per loan,
if you are interested in making the transition from broker to banker, or if you just need a roadmap for success, Mortgage Banking Solutions' primary focus is to enable executives to take their business to the next level and guide them down a path towards success and profitability. With over 300 combined years of experience in all facets of mortgage lending, the Mortgage Banking Solutions team of professionals has the expertise and know-how to help you accomplish your goals. New warehouse lines of credit,
broker to banker transitions, transitioning to hedging, financial and accounting services, or meeting your capitalization needs.
If you need help with these or any other aspects of your business, please contact a Mortgage Banking Solutions sales team to see how we can help you at 512-977-9900. That's 512-977-9900. Mortgage Banking Solutions. Enabling executives to take their business to the next level.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Dave Licken. By the way, I've heard a couple of you send me notes that say there's been some little garble on your line, Dave. We'll be watching it. I have another line I'm dialed into if we have to switch to it. My producer will let me know, but I appreciate some of you giving us a word. Let me know. We're trying to always deal with technology issues. We are dealing with technology. Through the marvels of the internet, we're able to bring you this program each and every week at this time. And we bring you hot topics, and there's certainly been no hotter topic than LO Comp and the roller coaster ride we were on last week. I have been, as you, many of you know, we have a LinkedIn discussion group that we started called Loan Originator Compensation and New Rules. Our new Loan Originator Compensation Changes and New Rules. It's a LinkedIn group. If you're a part of it, you know what I'm talking about. One of the contributors on that has been John Sachnet, who is with Patton Boggs. And I emailed John after one of his very, I thought, outstanding quotes. And by the way, we started another message group, LinkedIn group, called the Mortgage Call Report. And John has got an exciting, very important webinar later this week. We're going to talk about that on Thursday. But I emailed him and said, John, love to have you on, be a part of the program. And he says, I also have Rich, and it's Andreano, who is with the same firm. They are both partners with the Patton Boggs firm, a firm that's well-known to most of us in the industry. They head up the mortgage banking group. They represent financial institutions and brokers and servicers across the country on a vast array of state and federal regulatory issues. They have been, Rich specifically, has been very, very involved in the LO Comp, has been very close to the issue. We're going to get Rich on in just a moment, as well as John is deeply involved in state regulatory issues, and specifically a member of the Regulatory Trade Association, and is going to be talking to us the comp plan. Rich, welcome, and Rich and John, both of you, I want to welcome you to the program. Good to have you here with us.
Hello, good to be here.
Thanks, Dave.
Good to know that. Good to have you. Make sure your mics are on here and we got all the right buttons pushed. Rich, let's start off with you. What is last week we had the stay on the LO Comp and at the federal appellate level. What is likely to happen? Is this just a temporary speed bump? Is this really coming at us? Or what's your opinion or your perspective?
Yeah, what this is, it's a common procedure a court will do right on the eve of something becoming effective that's being challenged, of letting everything stay in place for a short time to let the court do its job and analyze the issue and, in fact, receive filings from both sides. And, in fact, the government did come in today. It had a noon Eastern filing deadline to file its position on the matter, and it has done so. And now the plaintiffs, the two broker associations, have until 10 a.m. tomorrow to file their papers. And the thought is that the court will probably rule shortly after that. And so what folks will tell you in this case is just because the stay was granted, that does not signal success on the merits. Now, it's certainly better than the stay not having been granted, certainly, unless that part must
right.
be positive for those who are challenging the rule. But it shouldn't be read as that means we're going to win. All it means is to a court was, a few days for a court, April 1 versus April 4, 5, or 6, isn't much a big deal to a court, really, on this type of situation. It just wants to make sure that it's looked at the issues, given itself enough time, heard both sides, and then will render a decision. But challenging federal rules are hard. It's a heavy
hard
lift.
Hard to do, yeah.
Hard to do, particularly on an expedited basis. That's even harder. So I think the more likely result is that the stay would be lifted and the rule would be allowed to go into effect. But we will have to see tomorrow, or if not tomorrow, probably Wednesday we'll know.
Well, you're close to both situations. Would you say both suits are aimed at stopping the rule entirely or just certain aspects of it? I'm assuming based on your last comments it's more just certain aspects of it.
It's actually, they're two different. Although the cases were consolidated, basically meaning the courts decided to put them together to hear them together, they really are different. The National Association of Independent Housing Professionals case really challenges the entire rule as a whole. The National Association of Mortgage Brokers case attacks a narrower aspect of the rule, particularly the aspect that says, if a consumer directly pays a broker entity, the broker entity cannot pay a commission to its loan officer. It could only pay a salary or hourly wage not tied to the transaction. So that's a lot narrower. And in fact, I found it interesting that The district court, although it did deny the NAMB's request to prevent that part of the rule from going into effect, did agree that there would be irreparable harm to the brokers. And in the end, it came down and balanced the government's interest versus the broker's interest and decide the government's interest won out, but significantly thought the brokers had met a key aspect of emergency relief in that they would face irreparable harm. So we now have three judges. When you have an appeal like this, it's actually three judges, not one judge. So they potentially could see that issue differently than the district court. Yeah.
That's very
Rich,
interesting.
This is Joe. I wanted to ask or better understand, the stay in essence delays the effective date of the original rule. So what was going to be in effect 4-1 is not in effect right now, and it won't be in effect until the court rules. Is that correct?
Right. What will happen is the court, if it decides against the plaintiffs, it will lift the stay, whereupon the rule goes into effect upon the stay being lifted. Should the court decide that one or both cases has merit, then it's a different. We'll have to see what the court does. It might decide to keep the stay in place and have further filings on the matter. But I think we're going to know that relatively quickly. Probably Tuesday or Wednesday we'll know one way or the other where this is headed.
Well, then that leads to the next question, which is, what should people be doing right now today?
Right, and I think it comes down somewhat to your own situation, and particularly the people that you deal with. So for brokers, the lenders you deal with, and for lenders, the investors that you deal with, because a lot of this comes down to, there's not a right or wrong answer. It comes down to policy is, do you go ahead and implement the plans that you had planned to implement on April 1 and go with that on the assumption that these cases are hard to win and probably would not be successful? Or even aside from that, can you operationally even do it? Because a lot of people had reprogrammed their systems, done a lot of work, and can't simply not flip the switch. In other words, everything was in place and set to go, and while they could revert back to the old system, they couldn't do it quickly. And so I think for some people, they were saying, no, we're going ahead with the plan on April 1 simply because we can't move and unflip all the switches because there's just too much programming and other things involved. Others, and particularly I think some smaller entities, had more flexibility to either say, okay, we're not going to implement the April 1 plan. We're going to stick with the old plan up until such point as the court renders a decision. For those people making a decision, I've just advised people is that you can do that internally is fine, but what you need to do, again, if you're a broker, and are the lenders that you're dealing with, what are they doing? Because if they're saying they're going to pay you under the new schedule, then that's what you're doing. Or if you're a lender and the investors have said, we think you should go with your April 1 plans and not keep the old plans in effect, then that's probably what you're doing. So it really comes down to each company. There's no right or wrong, but I strongly encourage folks to know what your business partners are doing and what they expect of you.
Well, and generally, do you have a sense that mostly the brokers are not implementing and the retail guys are, or what are your clients telling you?
What I'm seeing is a split in what companies are doing. If there's any correlation, I think it tends to be the companies that were larger or had more programming involved in the plans were sticking with the April 1 plan simply because they couldn't physically not do that come April 1. It was just there would be too much to do to undo all of the programming and everything else. And what I'm seeing among the smaller entities is there it's more of a mixed bag, where some of them are holding off on the April 1 plans and staying with the old plan, and others have decided, and I think in talking with some of their business partners, to go ahead with the April 1 plan. And should the courts decide to rule favorably in one or the other cases, they would then revisit the issue.
Well, thanks, John. This is Andy Schell. I have another question for you. You know, we're dealing with all of this Fed rule implementation, and, you know, we still have Dodd-Frank to deal with. So what should we expect once Dodd-Frank is rolled out, and what are the differences between Dodd-Frank and this Fed rule we've been dealing with?
That's the interesting thing. This is far from over, the whole concept of originator compensation, because we do have round two or whatever round number you might want to place on it, but we do have the Dodd-Frank part of the rule, which the Fed so far has indicated that that's probably going to be the Bureau, not the Fed. So that probably means we're looking towards this summer or sometime after that, when the Bureau takes over on July 21, that we will see the Bureau then starting to move forward, and it would move forward with a proposal first to implement Dodd-Frank. And there are some, while there's similarities, I think there are some pretty stark differences. While there is a prohibition against compensating an originator based on the loan amount, rather on the loan terms and transactions, there is an exception for the loan amount. And unlike the Fed rule says you can pay a fixed percentage of the loan amount. Dodd-Frank simply says you can pay based on loan amount, doesn't say fixed percentage, suggesting that that may be more liberal, and we'll have to see where the Bureau comes out on that. Conversely, they do have a provision that if the creditor were to pay the originator, that would be okay. The consumer could not also pay. But interestingly, the creditor in that case could not impose an origination fee or points or discount points on the consumer. In other words, would have to get everything through the interest rate unless there's a regulatory exception. And that obviously will be a very interesting provision that will get addressed, and whether obviously the industry will say clearly there needs to be a regulatory exception to create flexibility in allowing creditors to pay originators, and also impose origination points or discount points and origination fees to allow for consumers who want a low rate and are willing to pay cash up front for that. So I think that'll be an important provision. Interestingly, the steering restrictions under Dodd-Frank are much more expansive, and it really reflects that although Fed thinks what Congress did, you know, supported what the Fed did, I actually think what Congress did was very different, in that the Congress took a different approach, because the Congress spent most of its time on steering restrictions. And that's the key difference, where the steering restrictions in Dodd-Frank apply both to originators and to creditors. And that's very significant, because Congress thought the real reason for the crisis was consumers being steered to loans they couldn't afford when they would have qualified in many cases for less costly loans. So the Dodd-Frank really, it was less focused on originator compensation based on loan terms and more focused on steering a consumer to a bad product.
Well, now, do you think that given the new Congress and that we now have split houses, that we'll be given any relief as all this comes forward?
Well, Congress has said that it intended to exercise oversight with the implementation of Dodd-Frank, and I think this clearly will be a case that if Congress will be true to his word, it needs to exercise oversight here and step in, look at the Fed rule, look at Dodd-Frank, look at what the Bureau's doing, and frankly, let the Bureau know if it thinks that proposals are more restrictive than what Congress intended. I think there are some aspects of the Fed rule, particularly its interpretations of its own rule, that would draw a lot of questions and head scratching up on the Hill. And that, you know, I think there's an opportunity through the next round of rulemaking to have some of these more peculiar interpretations of the Fed addressed and see, you know, one way or another, have them addressed by the Bureau. But what we hope to get is a clear rule that's in the rule, not in informal interpretations of the rule, but actually in black and white, adopted for everyone to read, and everybody's on the same page. And not only is it clear, but also, frankly, more sensible.
And we'll be able to comment as well and get feedback and testify and all that.
Very important. It will be very – I know we're busy, things are hectic, and you're trying to do what's right in front of you, get the deal closed. But the importance of the industry commenting on the Dodd-Frank part of the rules will be very, very important and worth, well worth the time of the industry to actually sit down, look at it, and write their own thoughts on how it will affect their business, and both directly and working through their respective trade associations to put in the best, most comprehensive comments you can get in.
Yeah. Doesn't sound like I should be shutting down the LO LinkedIn or the LO compensation discussion on LinkedIn anytime soon, Richard.
Oh, no. This will be going for a while.
This will be going on for a while. Well, once the Dodd-Frank rule is rolled out, do you think or do we think that there is any chance of the Fed position on a certain issue? Will it remain fixed?
I think it will be. I know the number of the trades, assuming the rule stands, have particular issues that they are troubled by that the Fed has taken informally and intend to make those central in the comments on Dodd-Frank and also trying to get Congress to pay attention to the process, because I think a lot of the informal interpretations are viewed by the industry as being not only not clear from the rule but frankly inconsistent with the rule, and that had they know that the Fed took those views, would have addressed those views clearly in comments. But since the Fed came out and told us its views after it passed the rule, it was a little hard for the industry then to voice its opposition or concerns with some of those interpretations. So I do think the Dodd-Frank round will provide an avenue for the industry to get those points addressed, and if nothing else, to have the answer clearly set forth in a rule, even if it's not the answer that we would like.
We may not like the answer, but at least it's going to take out some of the ambiguity, because I think that's one of the things that's been driving so much anxiety is, you know, did they mean this? And then the thing that I keep hearing out of the feds is, well, we'll have to decide that in the courts. That will be decided in the courts. You heard that in that famous webinar they did, that they had a couple of references to, well, that may have to be decided by the courts. I hope to God that the Dodd-Frank rule will, in fact, begin to fix certain of the issues where there was ambiguity. Let's bring John into the discussion before we go to a break here. John, what else would you add to this discussion? I know you said Rich was an expert. Clearly he is. He's close to the issue. But you've been observing this. What's your observations?
Yeah, no, I think I would agree, obviously, with everything that Rich said, and I think, you know, where we've been having and seeing the most chatter, frankly, right before April 1, was what do we do? Do we roll out our plan? Do we not? And I think, as Rich said, there's really no right or wrong answer. It's really an issue of operationally, what are you able to do? What are you prepared to do? You know, for many companies, turning on and turning off and switching back and forth really is untenable. You know, there are some regulatory issues related to if you turned it on or if you didn't turn it on and then you turn it back off. But I think those are the issues, and I think Rich is right on that the most important thing is, if you're a broker, what are the lenders to whom you're brokering loans to? What are they doing? And if you're a lender, what are your investors doing? Because as we know, the law is great and guidance is great, but in the end, really what your investor will accept or won't accept is what's going to rule the day.
It's amazing. The old golden rule still applies here. The golden is with the investor, and they do continue to rule. And I think we saw it was really interesting, John, as we looked at a number of the big banks rolled out plans. The American Banker magazine sent me both of the Wells Fargo comp plan as well as B of A's comp plan, and it was really interesting reading and the complexity that some of these and the thought that's gone into it. But sometimes I really stress the importance of keeping it simple as much as possible and staying focused on that, on the simplicity as best we can, because Lord knows there's enough confusion on this. We thank you so much for both being here talking about this hot topic. We're going to be going into next. John, I want to get into talking about the call report. Many people have been so myopically focused on just the LO comp issues that many of them have not prepared or given it the thought that I think is necessary. So we're going to get into that and mix in the LO comp. By no means is this program over. It's got a lot of hot content. Folks, we'll be right back after this brief break.
It's time for the Mortgage Minute with Rob Katz of Delmar Data Track.
Our public debt is over $14.2 trillion. There's a lot of misinformation about our debt that I've read frequently. And last week, I came across an article at alternet.org by Joshua Holland that brings some clarity to the financial position the U.S. is in. Although this story isn't mortgage related, I want to share it with you as it may bring some new perspective to our state of affairs. Titled, Five Fun Facts About the $14 Trillion National Debt, Joshua touches on the fact that we have always been in debt. The Chinese do not hold most of our debt. Which political party leaves behind more debt? The impact our prior wars have had on our debt, and that our debt isn't all about borrowing money. I found this article insightful, and I hope it helps raise your level of understanding as well. You can find this story called Five Fun Facts About the $14 Trillion National Debt at alternet.org. That's the story that caught my attention this week. For the Mortgage Minute, this is Rob Katz with DMD. I'll be back next week with the news I think you should know about.
This has been the Mortgage Minute with Rob Katz of Delmar Data Track. Catch Rob's news of the week right here on the Lickin' on Lending Show or online at dmdinc.com. PMI Mortgage Insurance Company is the clear choice for your higher LTV conventional borrowers. Unlike FHA, PMI offers a choice of flexible premium plans to fit the individual needs of each borrower. From a one-time upfront cost with no renewal premium to a monthly plan with no upfront charges, PMI's premium plans recognize larger down payment and good credit history, saving your clients what can at times be thousands of dollars. PMI also provides lenders with fast electronic submission tools to increase efficiencies. Mortgage insurance is more relevant than ever, so it's important to utilize a mortgage insurer who's committed to the business for the long term. It is vital that you work with a company whose core competency is credit risk management and bring that wealth of knowledge to your firm. At PMI, mortgage insurance is their only business, so they have to get it right. PMI's mission is to create sustainable homeownership opportunities. To learn more about how PMI solutions can assist your business, please contact your PMI representative today or call 800-966-4PMI, 800-966-4PMI.
Welcome back, everybody. This is David Lickin with Lickin on Lending. We're so thrilled. I want to say a special thank you goes out to our sponsors, both PMI, DMD, and we'll be adding several more. I'm excited now that Optimal Blue is becoming a sponsor. Others are talking to us. If you're interested in sponsoring this program, having an ad on here, we'd love to help get your message out. Contact me at DLYKKEN at mortgagebankingsolutions.com. Our guests today are Rich Andriano and John Sockett Sockett to us with what's going on here, John. But anyway, we both of which are with the law firm of Patton Boggs. They have a webinar coming up April 7th, and I want to make sure we get this mentioned, thoroughly discussed at the top of this. It's a free webinar, if I'm correct on this. John, am I correct? It is a free webinar
right,
for
Dave.
Anyone?
That's right. On April 7th, we're going to host a webinar. One of my colleagues, Hayden Richards, will be moderating, and we've got folks from CSBS as well as state regulators from both Connecticut and West Virginia. Everybody knows, the report is not actually going to be made public until May 2nd, but one of the things that will happen during this webinar is you'll get a sneak peek at certain aspects of the report beyond that which, you know, some samples have been put on the NMLS website. So you'll see samples of the report. There'll be a discussion, a how-to, walking through all the various aspects. We think it'll be really informative. And it's actually the first one that we're aware of that's out there in later weeks. In the coming weeks, NMLS is going to be doing some webinars as well.
Well, it's good to get a jump on it. I encourage everyone to go out there. For those of you that want to get a link to it, you can go to lickinonlending.com, and down in the right-hand corner on the home page, you'll see a snapshot, a cut-and-paste picture of that. It's hard to read that, but if you click on that link and that bottom right-hand corner of where the ads are on the side, on the right-hand side of our website, you'll see their web
snapshot of their webpage that's talking about the webinar. Click on that. It'll go directly to their website, and you can get registered. I encourage you to get out there. I'll tell you, you can't, I mean, you sit and look, how can I afford to spend time on another webinar? But let me tell you, you can't afford not to be on this, especially if you're one of the business owners out there looking at what's going on. Let's get into the mortgage call report, John, briefly. And I got a couple questions for you. When will the report be available? You just started through the National Mortgage Licensing Service. You just alluded to it, but when will that be available?
That's right. It's May 2nd is the target, which really doesn't leave much time to the May 15 deadline for the submission of this very first quarterly monthly call report.
Well, hi, John. It's Andy Schell.
A couple
other questions for you. So will this new call report replace all of the other annual or quarterly reports that are out there?
Unfortunately, it won't. Although that's the goal, states can and actually are requiring their own reports. At last count, and again, some of this information is available on the NMLS website, but at the last count, there were 33 states that are going to require licensees to submit a separate annual report and or some other report outside of the NMLS. And, of course, the exact number will depend on the number of licenses and particular licenses you have. But you'll see more than half of the states, you still got separate reporting obligations beyond the call reporting obligations.
So, and how does this drill down into the individual LO call report requirements? So what's the story with that?
That's a very good question. Among the data that's required here is specific information about the numbers and the types of loans originated by LOs. Although the vast majority of the states actually place the obligation for reporting that LO-related data on the licensee, there are a handful of states actually that the obligation, at least by statute or regulation, is imposed upon the individual loan officer. Now, fortunately, based on our discussions with the folks at CSBS and NMLS, they're really trying to kill the individual LO call report obligation. And in part, particularly for the first couple of quarterly reports, they're not going to turn on the functionality on the NMLS that would permit an LO to directly submit their own data. They really think, for purposes of data integrity and others, that this should be a company obligation, and the companies are much better equipped to be able to calculate, collect, and submit this type of data.
Yeah, if I remember correctly, the current version of the report, the company has to report the activity from each LO anyway.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. And so why have duplicate reporting? Why place obligations on the LOs, particularly if and it's not yet clear how this is going to work out, but particularly if ultimately the integrity of the data and any errors are going to be the responsibility of the company itself.
Yes, yes. Now, quick back on the topic you were talking on with the final version being out on May the 2nd. Do you have a sense for or a wild guess as to how different the final report content format will be relative to the samples?
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly going to be more expansive, and maybe a better way to describe this is, everyone in the industry has been dealing in the various states with individual states' annual reporting obligations.
Uh-huh.
For the most part, the amount and the breadth and depth of the data that's going to be required for the monthly call report is beyond what virtually any state has historically been asking for. There are always some outliers and some states that have dug deeper. And so in the interest of uniformity, some states have sort of pared it back. But the breadth and complexity of the information that's going to be required is going to be challenging, I think, for a lot of folks because it's beyond what many of them have had to provide before.
Yes, yes. And the current samples on the NMLS website are more detailed than most mortgage companies' financials currently support, but certainly they can, like I mentioned in my segment, they could certainly expand the chart of accounts to capture it. It's just a matter of having the systems to support it all.
That's exactly right. I mean, you bring up a great point about the importance of capturing the appropriate data. People have said, well, what should I be doing? What you should be doing is looking through the information that's available
on the call report, looking through the definitions to see all the different fields that you're going to be required to capture, and running reports, printing reports, and making sure that your reports are actually capturing all of this data. It's unique data. It's different data. Give you an example. What are you going to do with a table-funded transaction? We know that for purposes of RESPA, for example, a table-funded transaction is considered a broker transaction. But for purposes of the NMLS call report, that actually gets a table-funded transaction would be reported in the correspondent wholesale channel. How does your LOS track that data? Are you going to be able to marry how you're tracking data and categorizing loans with how the call report is going to demand that you disclose this information?
Yeah, great advice. That's good stuff. Well, you know, we've got to do this new call report, which I don't necessarily think is a bad thing, but what about banks? What about FDIC banks and bank subsidiaries?
Yeah, it's a very good question. The obligation to file the call report applies to any entity that's licensed as a mortgage loan licensed company, or any entity that employs licensed versus registered loan officer. So while the depository institutions are not going to be subject to this, there certainly could be instances where subsidiaries of depository institutions will be required. And as a general rule, while their LOs aren't going to be required to be licensed, they may be required to be registered. The entity itself may be required to be licensed. So you could have a subsidiary of a state chartered bank that needs to be licensed, but its LOs only have to be registered. That entity is going to have to submit this call report.
Wow, great point. That's good.
Something else, you know, again, in terms of things to be thinking about and advice, you know, there are two ways that in which you're going to be able to input data. One is manually, and the other is through the XML upload function. And I'm not a tech guy, but particularly for the larger companies who have IT departments, it is incumbent upon you to, as quickly as you can, make sure that your IT department is familiar with the XML upload procedure. Again, we're going to walk through that in a little bit more detail on our webinar. But for the smaller guys who don't have sophisticated IT departments or just don't have the time, it's going to be a manual upload. And that, again, goes back to my original suggestion about printing out your data, doing it now, looking at it, making sure you have it already. We think it's going to take anywhere from 20 to 30 minutes per state to manually upload the data. Right? If you're in 40, 45 states, that's a couple of days of time.
There's some steps involved, and especially for the smaller companies, it is going to have an impact. So let's talk about how you are advising your clients, specifically some of your smaller clients, and how to prepare for May 2nd in anticipation of what's coming down the line.
Sure. Again, take advantage of the workshops that the NMLS is offering. I think it's a nominal fee to join those. Get really familiar with all the information that the NMLS has put on their website. There's some good information out there that still leaves open a lot of questions. Listen to our webinar. Run your reports. Get comfortable with your data. Make sure that you understand the differences and the definitions in the call report and how you characterize things internally. The NMLS has said that they're going to try to use the same definitions, for example, that are used in HMDA. I have not had a chance to look through every single definition. Given that it's the states, I can promise you that there will be differences. The definitions will not be uniform, unfortunately, across, you know, the various federal and state laws. You've got to be able to understand that.
And that's some of the nuances of this, with the states getting involved in this thing, that is going to be very, very important that people attend. Again, the webinar is this Wednesday, April 7th. It is at from 2 to 3:30 Eastern Time. And again, you can go to website, Patton Boggs' website. Just Google it, Mortgage Call Report. And I'm assuming it'll come up. But even better, you can go to www.lickinonlending.com. Down on the right-hand column, down at the bottom of that, you'll see the ads. We have our sponsors. You click on that picture of their website. website, it'll go directly to their website that talks specifically about that. John and Rich, thank you so much for being a part of the program today. It is, I think we're going to have you guys back as this continues to develop out. Please keep us informed, and you have my email. Send me emails when you say there's something that's got to get out to your listeners, Dave. We appreciate you so much for being with us today. Brad, thank you.
Thank you very much, Dave. And just a clarification, Thursday, April 7, not Wednesday, April 7 for our webinar.
I did say, Wednesday and I said April 7. So it's yes, thank you. I was looking at webinar and I read it as well. Anyways, I don't get it. It's Thursday, this coming Thursday, April 7th. I had the date right. I missed the day of the week. So thank you so much for the clarification. Again, you can go to the website and gather it. Thanks so much. Have a great week, you guys. Have a great webinar. I hope it's a great success. It's something everybody should attend. Yes, Joe.
A quick question for Rich or John before they get off. Again, can you give us your thoughts? What's your best guess? I won't ask you to give me the best guess on the outcome, but how about the best guess on when we might have an answer from the appellate court?
I think we'll probably hear either late tomorrow or Wednesday.
Wow,
so
that quick.
Yes.
Yeah, so this is not going to be drug out.
No.
It's, as Rich said, this is really a procedural issue, and the phrase we used was, guarded optimism as to what this really means. As Rich said, it was really just a chance to give the court the time to really consider everything, but is not necessarily an indication that they're leaning one way or another.
Thank you so much, both of you, for being with us. We look forward to hearing from you. We will post up. In fact, John, you're on our LinkedIn discussion group. Post something as soon as you know something so all our listeners can go to the LinkedIn discussion group, LO Compensation Changes and New Rules, and you'll get it directly from John at that point. Is that a good idea? Was that
something? I'd be happy to do it. Happy to do it.
Great. Good. Thank you so much. Folks, we had another event this last week that was going on, the tech conference. Was going on along with, I believe, the Quality Control Conference was running simultaneously with that. Our very own Tony Garitano, well, we like to think he's our very own. He's very much stands on his own. He is known within the industry as Mr. Technology. Tony, we ran over a little bit on that last segment. Can you give us a quick update from the tech conference, what really spotted? If you could do that in about 60 seconds, that would be much appreciated.
No problem, Dave. Thank you for having me back. In the past 2 weeks, there have been three big technology acquisitions that were the buzz at the show. We saw LPS acquire PCLender.com. We saw CoreLogic acquire Dorado. We saw D&H acquire MortgageBot. And we saw Ellie Mae finally price their IPO.
Yes.
We were a buzz at that technology show with acquisitions, and I can tell you the vendors were very happy with the prices. A lot of them, as you know, looking for an exit strategy themselves. It says that there are buyers out there looking for technology companies, and they're willing to pay for them. I don't think they're quite willing to pay as much as some of the vendors would like, but they did fetch a good price, Dave,
penny
was made, I'm sure, by everybody.
Yeah, it reminds me of that picture of the appraisal that hangs on every processor's corner. It says the view or the value, the picture of the value of your property. It's what the tax assessor says, and it's a mansion. It's what you think it's worth, and it's something big. And then it shows what the appraiser thinks, and it shows this little shack. So I kind of think that may be applicable to what goes on with how people value their mortgage companies. So how was the attitude, real quickly, Tony, at the conference? Was it fairly upbeat? I always like dialing in to getting what you're sensing from the conferences. What's the attitude?
The attitude was very upbeat. There were not very many lenders in attendance, Dave. I can tell you there were only about 70 lenders there representing about 30 or 40 different lender companies. So it was very vendor-centric.
Vendor-centric. Thank you so much, Tony, for being with us. Folks, you're going to want to come back and listen to the program next week. We're going to give an update on LO QRM and talk more about the call report. Special thank you goes out to our sponsors, PMI, DMD, and, of course, the new ones that will be joining us shortly. If you want to advertise, come talk to me. I'd love to talk to you and have you on the program. Special thanks goes out to John and Rich with specifically the Patton Boggs, and be sure to attend their webinar this Thursday, April 7th. Have a great week, everybody. Thank you.
This has been Lincoln on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lincoln of Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. Today's guests were Joe Farr from MBS Quoteline, Andy Schell of Mortgage Banking Solutions, and Alice Alvey, President CMB of Mortgage U. Come by next week and thank you for